Welcome to In Clear Terms with AARP California. Conversations on issues impacting Californians of all ages. Here's your host, Theon Gordon.
Welcome to In Clear Terms with AARP California. Join us as we dive into issues and policies that impact Californians of all ages, particularly older adults, and learn how you can connect with AARP to make our state more livable for all. I am an AARP volunteer and your host, Dr. Theon Gordon. Today, we will hear from fraud prevention specialist and former district attorney investigator, Jason Collum, on how we can stay safe and avoid common frauds and scams while traveling. Jason, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yes, yes. For listeners meeting you for the first time, what's your background in addressing frauds and scams?
Well, I've been a police officer for 30 years, and I worked patrol for almost 10 years and spent 20 years in investigations. I've done prior to getting into the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, I worked a variety of cases as a detective. I did special victims, child cases, sexual assaults, general fraud cases, violent crimes, gangs, you name it. And when I got to the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, I was first assigned to the Real Estate Fraud Grant. And it was in that grant, working that grant, that I encountered a lot of seniors who ended up losing their homes due to scams. And beyond that, my elected DA at the time did a lot of outreach events, and I started accompanying him to these events where I met lots of other seniors and folks that I really identified with and liked, who fell victim to many types of different scams. And a lot of them lost their life savings and really weren't made whole ever again. And at that point, I really wanted to step up and help them any way that I could. So while I was still on the real estate grant, I started on my own time, whenever I had some free time, I started working on these white collar crime cases that were targeting seniors, whether they be street scams, something that's online or over the phone. And I try to help them out as much as I can, to a point that eventually the elected DA took note of what I was doing and pulled me out of the real estate grant. And I was almost 100% focused on these types of cases for the next 11 years that I was at the DA's office in San Francisco.
Wow. Well, we are happy that they recognized that and pulled you out, and that you're helping especially seniors. Today, we're focusing on travel safety, whether we plan to take a trip or go about our daily commute. And we want to find out from you, what changes when we're traveling that makes us an easy target?
Well, I recall a funny story. When I first started in this business over the summer while I was in college, I was a national park ranger. And I remember being in the national parks out there in the middle of nowhere and driving down these beautiful, beautiful country roads and making all these turns. And upon blind turn after blind turn, I'd come around and there'd be a car stopped right in the lane of traffic. And it's a matter of luck that I never rear-ended any of these folks. And as national park rangers, we used to say, boy, it seems like when visitors travel to national parks, they tend to check their brains out. Apparently, it was a really good viewpoint for some of these folks to just stop after a blind curve to take photographs. And that's what they were there for. But they could have caused a lot of problems. And I think in general, when we're thinking about travel, when we're thinking about taking that 2-week-long vacation once a year, we tend to only think about the good things. We tend to only focus on all the things that we're going to fit into this 2 weeks. And a lot of common sense kind of goes out the window because we're trying to fit everything that we want to do into this 2 weeks. And we've invested so much of it. We've waited so long to go see what we're going to see, go where we want to go, that we're not really thinking things through. And we're more likely to, for better or worse, for efficiency, we're more likely to try to throw money at the issue to try to make it so that we can have a great experience and a very packed experience. It's a compromise.
Yeah, I love how you're saying that Yeah, it's like we're checking our brains at the door. Like we're checking our brains out so that we could go have fun.
Right.
And that's probably one of the biggest changes that happens with us.
And the bad guys realize that.
Exactly.
Because they've been there before. It's just human nature.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's focus on these different types of travel. So when we're focusing on traveling for vacation, for example, first and foremost, I understand that you have been traveling for years, like over 20, 30 years, whatever, and you travel with one backpack. How? We need the secret sauce in this.
I tell you what. So the best way to illustrate that I found out is actually in-person presentation. At Scam Jam, for example, I actually packed my bag the way that I would pack for one of my trips. And near the end of the presentation, I would take each and every piece out of my pack and show people how I actually pack. How I do it? Well, so for about almost 20 years, I always travel with one backpack, but I would use a check-in size bag. So a check-in size backpack, it's a little bit larger. I think everybody knows approximately what size it was. But in 2023, I took on a trip. I decided to go buy a one-way ticket somewhere in the world, whatever I found cheap, and just disappear for as long as I could. And for the 6 months leading up to this trip, I laid out everything that I brought with me over the years on my bedroom floor, tripping over it for 6 months. And every day I challenged myself to remove something from the pile. Every day I thought hard to think about removing something from the pile. And usually after a few days, I'd be like, okay, maybe I can do without this. I take it out, I put it away, and the pile started to shrink. And after about 6 months or so, when it was about time to get on the plane, I said, well, the carry-on bag is really a little bit clumsy. I'm going to try to fit this into a JanSport size backpack. And luckily, because of technology and innovations in fabric, I was able to fit what I wanted to bring into a JanSport school size backpack. And that's where I went. And from that point on, I ended up getting lost in Europe for 2 months and caught a flight from Milan to Hong Kong and got lost in Asia for another month. So I was on the road for over 90 days with just one backpack, school size backpack, that is. And at no point during that 3 months crossing continents did I ever say, I should have brought more stuff with me.
Wow, that is amazing. I mean, that in itself, I'm sure, can help cut down on some scams and fraud just because you're not carrying a lot of things with you that'll end up getting lost. And thank you for sharing that story. I love that. I love travel. And I know I'm going to be thinking about that now. I'm even thinking about it for closet organization. Can I get rid of one thing, maybe a day, and see if I could live without it? I don't know. That's going to be hard. But when we think about traveling for vacation, what are some of the biggest scam hotspots during the planning phase of vacation, like booking flights, hotels, tours, rentals? What are some of the biggest scams that happen there?
I feel that booking flights is pretty solid because nowadays, I think most of us book online. In the past in San Francisco, what I have seen is victims reported that they went to a travel agency and the travel agency made arrangements. They paid a deposit or they paid the entire amount up front for a huge discount. And come travel day, they get to the airport and the tickets were never issued. So those were the days, I think, before COVID when more things were in person. And I have investigated a few cases like that. Some of the travel agencies just overstretched their finances. They took new money from clients and paid off old debt or business expenses, or paid for the last client's travel because they were depending on new clients to come in to pay for the last client's travel. And during the COVID shutdown, because there were no more clients, that the stores weren't open anymore, the travel agency wasn't open anymore, there were no walk-in clients to pay for the last client's flight. So when these clients tried to get on board, they weren't able to do so. But I have seen a huge decrease in that type of cases, because I see most people now book their flights online. So that actually helps a lot. Make sure you go to the airline's website. And some folks like to go through some of the travel agencies' websites, some of the big names out there. But just make sure that wherever you go, it's something that's a trusted website or the airline's own website. And make sure you always check the airline's own website to confirm that there is a flight that exists for the time that you want to go. But the big compromise, I think, of when we plan the traveling is, again, what I was saying is that we're trying to fit so much activities into this short period of time that we want to get online and we want to just line up our schedule. And how we're going to do that is that, well, we're going to go to attraction A. I'm going to buy tickets for attraction A now for Monday morning at 9 o'clock. And as soon as I'm done with that, I'm going to get attraction B tickets. And at 12 p.m., I'm going to be going over to this other museum and seeing all that. Well, interestingly enough is that after years of just traveling and trying to book some of these tickets and wasn't able to because it's impacted or something was not right. Well, when I physically went to these attractions, turns out some of these attractions were free and somebody was just taking your money online. And who knows what they're going to do with your financial information once they take it, right? Maybe they'll send somebody to go out and get a free ticket and meet you at the door, but you could have gotten that free ticket yourself. And another place is in Germany, what I found is that some of the museum websites will say that they're fully booked for that day. But when you get there, I find out that they hold tickets for walk-ins so that the locals and others that just walk in can buy tickets and attend the museum. So don't get caught up on buying tickets online, having everything set up as a schedule. Part of traveling is experiencing yourself. And I think part of the experience is buying a ticket.
Yeah.
Or just going to the attraction itself to see if you even want to go inside before you commit. Because sometimes when you're lingering at a riverside cafe, having that nice meal, having that drink, maybe I don't want to go to that museum after all. Maybe YouTube has shown me enough of that attraction that I no longer need to visit it myself. And I'd rather enjoy my time here with my drink and my food along the riverside.
So having some flexibility might help you out a little bit, not being so rigid.
Lots of that. Pre-booking everything online, I feel, is the biggest point of compromise for travelers.
So that's where you can find these scams. Let's talk about some of those common on-the-ground type of scenarios. So we know about, you just mentioned the online ones can get you in a little trouble. What are some of the most frequent scams that you see targeting travels in airports or tourist areas or transit hubs?
Well, at airports, just like major train stations, this can be anywhere in Europe, in Asia. Folks know that we're tired, we just got off the plane, or we just got off a long distance ride, and all we want to do is put our stuff down somewhere, relax, take a nap. I tend to see a lot of folks that offer taxi services, and they would be in the lobby offering taxi services. And whether it's an agent that sends you out to a car that's waiting, or the driver themselves that walk you back to the car, you never know what you're getting yourself into when you get into these taxi services. That's why I always try to encourage folks to stay away from people who actively engage you in these types of services. Any major airport that I've been to, any major rail station I've ever been to, has always had a taxi stand. True, you might have to wait your turn, but at least you know you're going to be able to get there. And my offer of advice is, you're traveling. You're supposed to see where you're going. You're supposed to sightsee along the way. Forget the taxi. Nowadays with Google, just go ahead and do public transportation and see what are your options of taking public transit. And for me, I always suggest taking the bus versus the underground railway, because on a bus, you get to see stuff along the way. You get to be excited about what you're about to see in this town. And you get to meet some locals and also figure out the transit system and figure out how you're going to get on these metro transits, whether you need to buy a card or an app. It's good to learn, and it's good to learn from the safe environment of an airport or the major train station before you get out of the gate.
Oh, yeah.
So get on. Figure out what you're going to do, where you're going to go, how you're going to get there before you get out the gate, before that massive craziness of folks just attack you from all sides offering their service. By the time you get out of that customs gate, you know where you're going.
Absolutely. Oh, Jason, I love that. I just recently went to Japan with my sister, and we were traveling as seniors. I'm over 60. She's 10 years older than me.
You don't look it.
Thank you. And so
you don't look a day over 30. Come on now.
Thank you. So we're traveling and we decided to take public transportation to get to our hotel. And it was amazing. In most airports, they do have a transit that'll help you get around. They'll tell you about ground transportation. And so we got a chance to take the bus. And you're right. We got to see the city before getting started. Now, one thing that we got surprised with in Japan, we said, do you have a senior discount? And they were like, what's that? You know, like everybody in Japan's older and we get along. We're not seniors. You know, it's like a 90-year-old saying, get to my age. And then you ask me for a senior discount. You know, so we had such a great time, though, traveling on public transportation. And it's not anything to be afraid of. I think we were a little apprehensive at first in another town. All the signs are in Japanese. We don't speak Japanese. And I said, well, we have my little thing here on the phone that we can figure out and we can find a way to figure this out. And we did. So great tip to get to know the locals and we'll save you from being scammed.
Yeah, and especially in Tokyo, when you pulled up Waze to get into town, you probably saw six different options.
Yes.
At six different price points.
Yes.
And you know what? You just empowered yourself at that point. You're no longer just visiting. You know something about the country. At every budget, depends on your time and your investment in this trip, you have all these options available to you. Instead of running out to the closest taxi stand and getting out there in town, maybe at a slower pace than a train or a bus.
It was great. It was great doing it. And we ended up doing public transportation for the whole trip because it was easy to do it from the start. So we ended up doing it for the whole trip. Now, part of that was avoiding any type of scam that may have happened with somebody coming in and getting us to get a ride with them. But what are other ways that we can protect ourselves or avoid scams in these type of situations where you have tourist areas and transit hubs? How can we protect ourselves?
I see it in America. I see it in Asia. I see it in Europe. At the ticket machine, at the local metro system, there's always somebody lurking who speaks English, who's trying to help you buy that ticket. And as you know, it doesn't matter where you go nowadays, those transit machines, there is always an English option. But if somebody is just hammering you with, let me help you, let me help you. It's just like you're trying to figure things out on your own and you could have done it if they would just leave you alone. But the point of that is that they want to pressure you into having them help you, whether it's going to be for a tip, whether it's going to be taking your credit card number, or whether it's going to be selling you a ticket that they have themselves. So what I found out from a recent trip in Spain is the transit ticket is good for 2 hours. And when you leave the terminal and get out the exit gate, there seemed to be always somebody who said, don't throw that away. I'll help you throw it away. Just give it to me. So they grab those tickets. And they turn around, they resell them for half price. But again, the problem is those tickets are only good for 2 hours. So you never know how much time is left on there. So, okay, you get a half price ticket. You're able to get into the turnstile. But let's say you're on the train for 15 minutes, for 20 minutes, however long it is, just so happens that that 2 hour limit has ran out. So now you cannot get out of the turnstile. And guess what?
You got to pay again.
They don't play overseas. When the conductors come to you and say, what do you mean you didn't pay for a full fare? Here's your fine. Pay right here, right now. I take credit card and I take other forms of electronic payments. And I tell you what, so what I've seen that's a huge change since COVID is that a lot of metro systems around the world now do apps. So an app on your phone replaces buying the physical ticket at the machine. So make sure you go to the proper train company's app, download that app, and your credit card information, your personal information is stored in that app. And you can actually just buy tickets as you're walking down towards the train because you just pick the time you want to go. You walk down the train, there's a QR code that pops up. You scan that QR code at the turnstile, and boom, you're in.
Oh, that's a really great tip, Jason.
That has been the biggest change in the last few years of travel, going through a paperless ticket and app on your phone.
And Jason, that's such a great tip. Thank you for that, because it allows us to really think about ways to protect ourselves is actually use our digital tickets. And you can do that for the tourist areas and transit hubs. Everywhere usually has some kind of app. It's like scan the QR code and you can get in and download the app. So that's a wonderful way to protect ourselves and know that we have something that's reputable. Well, you know, a lot of travelers, a lot of people nowadays, and our listeners in particular, travel solo. I like to travel solo. What are your top safety guidelines for solo travelers, especially when we're traveling in unfamiliar places?
I'll make a statement first. Traveling solo, it's one of the most rewarding experiences you'll ever have. You don't have to look at another person to see if they're happy with your choices. You do what you want. You stay out as late as you want, or you go back as soon as you want to. And local people are more likely to engage you, I feel, when you're traveling solo, because out of the context of America, there's still this overwhelming desire to be polite. So a lot of folks don't want to interrupt a couple who's traveling or friends who are traveling. But if you're solo, it seems like you're fair game. And if you have a drink or a smoke, boy, you are in. You are in most places in the world.
It's the best feeling ever. I love traveling solo too.
So I always encourage that. In terms of top safety, I tell you what, a lot of times just being solo, I feel it's much safer than having two people travel together or two or more people travel together. Because again, you're choosing where you want to go. You're choosing what you want to do. You're not compromising and you're not upset, engaged that we're doing this and not paying attention to your own safety. And by yourself, know exactly where you are. I think, again, digital devices are great. Technology is great. Google will take us to exactly where our Airbnb is, where our hotel is. But it behooves you to actually pinch and zoom and look at the map and see exactly where you're going to be staying. I would always try to look around the area. And usually you can hit some of the attractions around there and see what's close to you. What are some major streets and avenues that are close to you where you're staying? What are some of the plazas that are close to where you're staying? Just in case something happens, you can run to wherever it is. And the other thing is, make sure you know the local emergency services phone numbers and program those numbers into your phone. I've been to a country where police, it's one number, fire is a different number, and paramedics is yet a third number. And they're not 911. Each one is unusual. So go ahead and know those things, program those into your phone, and always just be aware. It seems like when you're single, again, I feel that I'm not being targeted as much as a single person, but of course, I also dress down most of the time. I'm in a t-shirt. I'm older, but I still try to be a college student. A poor, poor college student with one backpack. And I think looking the part and trying to fit in a little bit more with the locals. What I mean is, it's not, I want you to dress the way they do. I just maybe lower your volume.
Yeah.
Observe what other people do around you. I think you've noticed in Japan how it's silent all around you.
Yeah.
And observe that and take that into account. If people are doing certain things and if you see the general crowd is doing certain things, maybe you should do the same.
Is that the old when in Rome, do as the Romans? When we're doing international travel, is there something we should do differently overseas with our identification, our money, our documents? Is there something we should do to avoid scams there?
Well, one of the first things I always do before I leave is that I make copies of my documents. And back in the Xerox copier days, I would go and actually make color copies of these and put them in my money belt. Big thing, by the way, money belt. But nowadays, again, with digital technology, what I would do is take pictures of these documents, front and back, all pages, and go ahead and upload that into your iCloud or your Microsoft cloud, whatever cloud that you can have remote access to in case you do lose these documents. And I still make that physical photocopy, but I usually leave that back at home with somebody that I trust just in case I can't get access to my cloud because I lost my phone and I can't get a replacement anytime soon. I can just reach out to somebody back home and say, hey, can you send me the copy of my passport, credit cards, ATM cards, all the things that I need to survive overseas.
Very important, uploading it to the cloud. I hadn't thought about that, but I did think about taking pictures. But uploading it and making sure it's uploaded, I think, is really critical.
And one of the ways to mitigate the loss of a passport is actually, it's easier for you to step in the door of a U.S. embassy or U.S. consulate in a foreign country when you actually have an image of your U.S. passport that you lost.
Yeah.
I tend to see that the Marine Guards will treat you a little bit differently when you say, hey, look, I'm an American citizen. I lost my passport. Where's the line? There you go.
And then is there a way we should keep our documents when we're in another country?
Absolutely. I keep my passport. I keep my credit card, my ATM card, and my cash in a money belt underneath my pants. And the only thing that I keep in my pocket, or the only cash I keep in my pockets, is it's enough cash for a very light lunch, like a sandwich and a cup of coffee. And that's all I have. And I've traveled to places, Rome, where they actually reach into your pocket right in front of you. You're like, hey, man, thanks. There's nothing there other than a few bucks that I'm holding on to in my fist now. So a money belt, it's very important, and very important that you use it, very important that you keep it with you.
All right. That's a good tip. You know, when we're on the road, we're talking about these digital things and everything. And when we're on the road, a lot of times we will use public Wi-Fi, charging stations, the hotel business centers and things like that. Are there any top digital risks that we should be looking for, and how can we reduce those?
I try to avoid the public Wi-Fis. Usually from what I've seen overseas, whether it's Europe or Asia, the data blocks are quite cheap. The data blocks from your eSIM card or your SIM chip, they're quite cheap. I usually just pay for about 10 gigs or so for every month of travel. That's plenty for me. So I try to stay on the cell network for all the things that I do on the phone. I try not to log into the local Wi-Fis because I just don't know who's watching. And then in terms of the free charging, I would never plug my USB cord into another USB plug because that is a point of compromise. As some of you might know, when you plug a USB cord into your laptop, it actually communicates with your phone and it knows what's on your phone because you're able to pull photographs from your phone into the laptop. So same avenue that a bad guy might be able to download information from your phone is from that USB cord. So what I do is I always look for the electrical plug. And if I need an adapter, I get the adapter for that particular country or region. I plug in my US plug, I plug it into the adapter, I plug into a wall outlet. And there's almost no way somebody can compromise the data on your devices through that electrical wall outlet.
All right. That's a great tip as well. Yeah. And having that electrical adapter. Now they have the adapters that are multi-country. So you can get those type and then you just have to have one adapter.
Travel light, keep it simple.
Yes. All right. So let's play the quick scenario game. And this is going to be relevant to staying safe while traveling. And we're going to see what you have to say as the expert in this game. So we're going to do quick scenarios and you give us a quick answer on them. So ready?
Let's go for it.
Okay. We're going to go for the speed round. We're going to do 3 to 4 questions here. First scenario. I found a rental that's 40% cheaper, but they want payment via wire transfer to hold it. What do you say?
Don't do it. Protect yourself. Always use a credit card that has rental car coverage, rental car protection. And if you don't know whether yours has it, go onto your credit card's website or call the number on the back of your credit card to figure out whether you have that type of protection. Never, ever, ever do wire transfers, because once that money is gone, 99% of the time you're not able to recover it. And now you also compromise yourself in the long term because they may have your bank's account information.
All righty. All right. Number two, someone called my hotel room saying that they were the front desk and they need to confirm my credit card number. What should I say?
I'll be downstairs right now. I'll see you there. What's your name?
All right. So do not give out your number over the phone, right?
That's right.
Okay. Scenario number three. My phone was stolen on day 2 of my trip. What is a step-by-step plan I can do in the first hour?
Well, hopefully your phone is already locked biometrically, or at least via a difficult code. I always recommend more than 4 digits as a lock code and nothing in sequence, nothing that's easy to guess. 6 is better than 4. Hopefully the device itself, it's not going to be an issue for you because it's locked. And if somebody steals it, yes, they can clean wipe the phone, but they can't access your information. So hopefully that's the case for the device itself. And in terms of the data that's on the device, I hope that you have backed up all this data into the carrier or the phone company's cloud website. So you, in a pinch, you can get a new phone and just access that account and get everything back on your phone, including the bank apps.
Okay. All right. Our last scenario. I went to Italy 2 years ago where I rented a car, and now I'm receiving bills for speeding violations from a collection company. What should I do?
Dear Lord, so I'll tell you one from personal experience. I can't tell you what you should do. I'll tell you what I did. So I rented a car in Germany a few years ago. In Germany, of all places, where they're famous for having no speed limits, I got a speeding ticket. And I said, no, no, no.
You went past the non-speeding limit.
No, you know what? That can't be me. So I get an email from the rental car company. I'm like, no, that can't be me. So anyways, I click on the attachment, the PDF attachment. Well, sure as heck, here I am driving, looking at the camera. I said, oh, okay. All right. Well, I guess so. So anyways, the speeding ticket, because it was a low figure, I think it was below 7 kilometers an hour, like below 3 miles an hour or 4 miles an hour over the speed limit, it cost me 20 euros, which was about $22. And the rental car company charges you a handling fee for 50 euros. Speeding tickets for 20, rental car company charged 50. Okay. So anyways, rental car company already took that money without letting me know out of the credit card that I rented a car with. Okay, fine. So now I'm left with this ticket attachment. So I printed that out, and my goodness, it's in German. It's 2 pages long worth of German. And so back then, the technology wasn't like now where I can just take a picture and have it translated. So what I actually did was, word for word, I typed it into the computer and translated it. And basically it's saying, on this date and time, on this road, I went X mile an hour or kilometers an hour over. And the violation comes from the Rhine police agency, and I owe them 20 euros. Okay, fine. So there's an email down below with a Fräulein's name to it. So I wrote them back with Google Translate and say, Fräulein Schmidt, how are you? And I'm trying to pay this. Do I send you a check? Do I send you a credit card number? How do I pay this? Because I want to pay this. And I get this email back, and after translating, it says, we do not accept credit cards. We do not accept checks. We accept bank wire transfers, and we accept cash. Well, again, I'm not going to do a bank wire transfer because there might be issues with long-term somebody knowing too much information about you, right? So I picked the cash option. So I said, okay, I want to pay cash. How do I pay cash? She says, well, just slip 20 euros in an envelope and mail it to us. And I said, you know what? That's odd, but it's 20 euros. I'll do it. It's $22. What I did was, with that printed letter citation, and I happen to still have 20 euros with me, I put that down on a table. I wrote out an envelope with an international stamp to the police department's address. I took a photograph of all that, and I dropped it in the mail and mailed it off to this address in Rhineland in Germany, and hope for the best. I followed up when I dropped the money into the mail. I also sent the image of that to the Fräulein at the police department in Germany saying, hey, look, I dropped in the mail. It's on the way. And 2 weeks later, after I dropped the money into the mail, I get an email back from the same Fräulein saying that the issue has been resolved. I remember those 3 lines from Google. So that was it. I paid it myself. So I don't know how you feel about getting a ticket overseas. I don't know what you would do, but this is what I did. Personal experience.
Wow, that was quite an experience. And this one came from the police that you're talking about, but this other incident was from a collection company. So that might be the difference as well. Just checking out the source. You checked out the source and you did your homework and paid the ticket. So I guess for that one, I'd say check out your source and do your homework and then decide, make that decision.
Yeah, that's really good. For all types of fraud cases, I always say do your due diligence. Go to the source. Go backwards, level after level. You're going to discover where this originated from and talk to the source and talk to them over the phone. Talk to a live person.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for those tips and for playing our scenario game. Quickly, what is one habit that makes travelers dramatically safer when traveling?
Traveling light.
Traveling light. I love that. Love that. And what is the best item to pack for safety?
A money belt.
Money belt. All right. Those are our two takeaways. Travel light, have a money belt. Okay. Jason, tell us, where can listeners find help and resources if they have concerns about fraud or want to learn more?
AARP has a very, very robust website on all types of frauds and scams. In fact, when I'm doing research on new emerging frauds and scams, I often log on to AARP and see what's going on, because AARP Fraud Center do hear out the latest scams and frauds that are out there. And just being out there engaging, being at social events, I think puts you in a more awareness mood and you know what's going on out there. So don't sit at home. Don't just sit around and watch YouTube all day long like I did when I first retired. Get out there, talk to people, meet folks, and join groups.
Yeah, that's a great one. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Do you have anything else you'd like to share before we close out today's interview?
I always say, don't be fixated on chasing after the big sites. Those big sites you've already seen plenty of times on YouTube, on social media, right? Travel for yourself. Think about what you really like and just go do those things. And remember, because you're in a place you've never been to, every street that you walk down, it's going to be a whole new experience. Go out there, enjoy yourself, and don't think too much.
All right. Thank you so much, Jason. It's been such a pleasure. Well, that's it for today's episode of In Clear Terms with AARP. Today, you heard from fraud prevention specialist Jason Collum. To learn more about AARP's work in California and how to get involved, visit aarp.org/CA. Thank you for listening.